All right, everyone, buckle up, because we're diving deep into a legal case today that's all about power and control, you know, that kind of thing, and what it really means to own a piece of a company.
It's a fascinating case that gets to the very core of corporate law, you know. It raises some serious questions about how power is balanced, you know, between shareholders.
We're talking about the 1971 Illinois Supreme Court case, Stroh v. Black Hawk Holding Corp. And
yes, Stroh, a landmark case. Legal scholars still debate it today.
And you've brought a whole stack of sources for us to look at. Briefs, analyses, even some historical background.
Oh, absolutely. I thought it'd be interesting to, you know, really get into the weeds with this one.
Okay, so let's imagine a company, Black Hawk Holding Corp., and they decide to get creative with how they structure their stock. So they issue these two types of shares, Class A shares.
Right, your typical shares, the kind you buy on the market, dividends, assets if the company goes belly up, all that.
The whole nine yards, yeah. But then they've got these Class B shares.
Now, this is where things get interesting. These were mostly held by the company's founders.
And get this, Class B shares, only die came with voting rights, no economic rights. At all.
No dividends, no piece of the pie if the company liquidates.
And to top it off, these Class B shares were sold for like a tiny fraction of what the Class A shares cost.
Yeah, a very unusual setup. Raised a few eyebrows, you could say.
Definitely. So in comes our plaintiff, Donald Stroh.
Representing a whole bunch of Class A shareholders who, well, weren't exactly happy about this whole Class B situation.
They were pretty upset, feeling it was unfair. Yeah. They called these Class B shares phantom stock. Basically saying they weren't even real because they didn't represent actual ownership in the company.
Their argument was, you know, how can you have the right to make big decisions about a company if you don't have any financial stake in it?
Right. It's like having a say in how to drive a car that you don't even own.
Right. Exactly. So they took Black Hawk Holding Corp. to court to settle this. And, you know, this case didn't just go straight to the Illinois Supreme Court. It had quite a journey getting there.
Ah, so there's more to the story than meets the eye.
Yeah. It started in a lower court, the circuit court. And guess what? The plaintiffs, they actually won.
No way. They got those Class B shares thrown out.
Yep. The court agreed that they were invalid. But, of course, Black Hawk Holding Corp. wasn't going to give up that easily.
Of course not. Stakes are high. What happened next?
Well, the case went up to the appellate court, and they decided to overturn the lower court's ruling.
Whoa, a plot twist. So now it's a real battle.
Yeah, and that's how it finally landed in the Illinois Supreme Court. And they had to tackle a big question. Does Illinois law allow companies to just create shares that have only voting right freights, you know, with no economic rights attached?
So basically, can you have a voice in a company without actually having any ownership in it? That's a big deal. What did the court say?
Well, the majority opinion, written by Justice Davis, basically said, yes, you can. They looked closely at the Illinois Business Corporation Act and really focused on this term, proprietary interests, which the act uses to define shares.
Okay, proprietary interests. That sounds important. What exactly does that mean in this context?
Well, the majority argued that proprietary interests are more than just economic rights, like dividends or getting a share of the assets. They said that having a say in how the company is run through voting rights could be considered a proprietary interest, even if you don't have, you know, a direct financial stake.
So they're kind of expanding the definition of what it means to own something in a company. It's not just about the money anymore. It's also about the power to make decisions.
Precisely. And this was key because it meant that the Class B shares, even though they lacked those traditional economic rights, were still seen as representing some form of ownership.
So by widening what proprietary interests could mean, they created a way for these voting-only shares to exist legally. But, I mean, there has to be more to their reasoning, right? It can't just be about redefining a single term.
You're right. The majority also really leaned on the idea of the corporate charter as a binding contract. They basically said, look, if all the terms of these Class B shares, including the lack of economic rights, were clearly stated in the charter and everyone agreed to them, then the courts shouldn't interfere.
So it's like any contract, you're bound by what you sign, even if it seems a bit odd or maybe even unfair later on.
Exactly. They argued that as long as there was no trickery or deception and everything was transparent, then the court should respect what was laid out in that corporate charter. Like, you know, upholding the sanctity of contracts, even in this crazy world of corporate structures.
Okay, I'm starting to see how they reached that decision. Expanding the definition of what ownership means and emphasizing the importance of agreements. But I have a feeling this wasn't a simple everyone agrees kind of decision, right? I mean, This whole setup seems like it could be ripe for abuse.
You're picking up on something really important here. There was another side to this story, a dissenting opinion that strongly disagreed with this whole separation of voting rights and economic interests. Welcome back to our deep dive into Stroh v. Blackhawk Holding Corp. As you'll recall, the big question was, can a corporation issue shares that have voting power but don't come with any economic rights, you know?
Right, and in the end, the Illinois Supreme Court said, yep, they can, siding with Blackhawk and those voting-only Class B shares. But like we mentioned, there was a dissenting voice in the court, someone who had some real concerns about this.
Absolutely. Justice Schaefer wrote a pretty powerful dissenting opinion that really gets at the heart of what it means to actually own a part of a company and, you know, the possible problems of separating voting rights from economic interests.
Okay, so let's dig into this dissenting opinion a bit. What were Justice Schaefer's main issues with the majority's decision? What made him so worried about these voting-only shares?
Well, at the core of it, Justice Schaefer's dissent disagreed with how the majority interpreted proprietary interests. He thought their reading was way too broad and, you know, really twisted the idea of what it means to own stock.
So he felt like taking away economic rights from a share basically made it meaningless, like it wasn't really ownership anymore.
Exactly. Justice Schaefer believed that owning stock is all about having a financial stake in the company, you know, sharing in both the good times and the bad. To him, if you remove those economic rights, it's like you're pulling out the foundation of what ownership actually is.
Yeah, it's like you have a voice but no skin in the game. You can influence decisions, but you don't face those same financial risks as everyone else. Seems like that could create an imbalance of power.
That's exactly what worried Justice Schaefer. He was saying that this separation could lead to situations where the people with those voting-only shares might make choices that benefit them personally, even if it hurts the company as a whole or the other shareholders.
Oh, I see. So imagine the founders, those with the Class B shares, decide to take a big gamble with the company. They might be more willing to take that risk because they won't personally lose money like the Class A shareholders who have most of the economic interests.
That's the kind of scenario that Justice Schaefer was concerned about. He argued that this structure creates a disconnect, you know, between who's controlling the company and who's actually accountable for the outcomes. Those who have the power to vote, he thought, should also be the ones who feel the financial consequences of those decisions.
So it sounds like he was worried the majority's decision could lead to a sort of corporate dictatorship where a small group has all the control but maybe doesn't have the best interests of the company at heart.
Yeah, he definitely saw the potential for abuse there. And for him, it wasn't just some theoretical problem. Justice Schaefer actually pointed to real-world examples where these dual-class stock structures were used to entrench management, you know, or to make it hard for anyone to take over the company, or even to just benefit the controlling shareholders at the expense of everyone else.
So he was bringing in real-world evidence to show that these concerns weren't just hypothetical, they were actually happening and could really damage how corporations are governed.
Exactly. And he didn't stop at just pointing out the problems. Justice Schaefer actually offered a different way of looking at the Illinois Business Corporation Act. He argued that the majority was wrong to put so much emphasis on that term proprietary interests.
So he's basically challenging their whole justification for allowing these voting-only shares in the first place.
That's right. Justice Schaefer said that while Illinois law does let you create different types of stock, it doesn't actually say anywhere that you can issue shares with absolutely no economic rights attached. He believed that the fact that the law doesn't mention it specifically means it wasn't something they intended to allow.
So if the lawmakers wanted voting-only shares to be a thing, they would have written that into the law. The fact that they didn't, according to him, suggests that this kind of structure goes against the spirit of the law.
That was his point. And he brought up examples from other states where the law specifically allows for shares that don't have voting rights, you know, contrasting that with how Illinois does things.
It sounds like he was in favor of a stricter interpretation of corporate law, one that keeps that link between ownership and control very clear.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Justice Schaefer believed that weakening that link would undermine the basic principles of fairness and accountability in corporations.
This whole back and forth between the majority opinion and the dissent in the Stroh case really shows the ongoing debate about how power should be balanced within corporations. On the one hand, there's the argument for giving companies flexibility so they can innovate and find the structure that works best for them. But on the other hand, You have to worry about protecting everyone involved and making sure that the decisions being made are responsible.
Yeah, it's a complex issue, and there's no easy answer. And as we'll see in part three, this whole tension between giving companies freedom and making sure they're accountable is something that's still playing out in the corporate world today. The Stroh case wasn't just a one-time decision. It had a real impact on how corporations do things and how people think about corporate governance.
Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into Stroh v. Blackhawk Holding Corp. We've gone through the majority opinion, we've heard what the dissent had to say, and now it's time to kind of zoom out and think about what this case means in the bigger picture, you know?
This wasn't just some obscure legal case. It had a real impact on how corporations operate and the discussions about how they should be run. It's still relevant today.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how a court decision from way back in the 70s can still be shaping things today.
Well, the Stroh case really opened up the possibilities for how companies could structure themselves, you know? It gave them more options for designing their shares and deciding how voting power is distributed.
And as we've been talking about, that flexibility has its pluses and minuses. It's like a two-sided coin.
Exactly. On the one hand, it could help encourage innovation and attract different types of investors. You know, companies might find it easier to get funding or partner with others if they can offer different classes of shares to suit different needs.
Yeah, like maybe a company wants to appeal to investors who are more interested in long-term growth and are okay with having limited voting rights because they could see bigger returns down the line.
Right. But on the other hand, as Justice Schaefer warned, this flexibility could also make it easier for some to take advantage of the system. It raises the question of whether too much power ends up in the hands of a few, potentially at the expense of other shareholders.
And we've seen examples of this in recent years, haven't we? Like cases where founders or certain groups of investors use these dual-class stock structures to hold on to control, even if they don't have a huge financial stake in the company anymore.
Yeah, and those situations definitely spark debate about whether those structures really benefit everyone involved or if they mostly just help those who are already in charge.
So the Stroh case really gets at some fundamental questions about power and balance within corporations, questions that are just as relevant today as they were back then. Like, how much control should founders or a small group of investors have? How do you make sure that the rights of smaller shareholders are protected? And how do you ensure that decisions are made responsibly and in a way that benefits everyone, not just a select few?
Those are at the heart of what corporate governance is all about. And the Stroh case forced the legal system to confront those questions head on.
It's interesting to think about how Stroh fits in with the current trends we see in corporate governance today. You know, there's a lot of talk these days about shareholder activism, ESG investing, and diversity on boards. Do you see any connections there?
Oh, absolutely. The Stroh case really brought attention to the importance of corporate governance and the need for systems that ensure accountability. Things like shareholder activism, for example, have become a much bigger force lately, with investors using their votes to push for changes in companies, whether it's about environmental issues, social justice, or something else.
So in a way, Stroh helped create the space for this kind of activism by highlighting the potential for power imbalances within companies and the need for shareholders to make their voices heard.
That's a good point. And ESG investing is another example of how investors are using their influence to try and guide corporate behavior. They're not just thinking about profits anymore, but about whether a company's actions align with their values.
And Stroh reminds us that how a corporation is structured can have a big effect on how it acts. Things like how voting rights are given out, who's on the board of directors, how transparent the decision-making process is. All these factors play a role in whether a company operates responsibly and looks out for the interests of everyone involved.
Right, and that's why understanding cases like Stroh is so crucial, even for those of us who aren't corporate lawyers. It helps us understand how corporations work, the good and bad that can come from different structures, and the role that the law plays in shaping how they behave.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Stroh v. Blackhawk Holding Corp., what are the main things you'd want our listeners to take away from all this? What should they be thinking about as they work with or deal with corporations?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that the structure of a corporation really matters. It can have a huge impact on how a company functions, who profits from its success, and how it affects society as a whole.
It's not just about some legal technicalities. It's about power. It's about accountability and the responsibilities that come with controlling a lot of resources.
Exactly. And as legal professionals, we have a duty to understand these structures, analyze what they mean, and advocate for systems that allow for both innovation and accountability.
Stroh v. Black Hawk Holding Corp. A case that still makes us think hard about the role that corporations play in our society and that delicate balance between giving them the freedom to thrive and making sure they do so responsibly. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you found it insightful.